Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weven, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Chad Peter Parker Riley.
Thwip, thwip.
And also with us is Mr. Spencer Spider Noir Williams.
Now, why'd you go there?
Because he knows that of the two of us, I will do it right.
It's true.
Okay.
We got a great show in stores. We're going to be talking about the upcoming, recently released. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. So stick around as we talk about that. But before we do, Chad, give them the opening credits.
Yeah, as far as we know, in every corner of the multiverse, The Filmlosophers is brought to you every week by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios, except that one reality where VGB and Mingle Media are brought to you by Filmlosopher Studios.
Ooh.
Let's get there. Did you know you can get new content from wherever you are in the Spider-Verse? Subscribe to The Filmlosophers so you never miss our lessons. They debut each Wednesday morning on a range of streaming platforms, including Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom.
Stay up to date with all the Spider People and the Filmlosophers by joining in on our social media streams. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Finally, our website has every episode that we've ever recorded, plus a few extras. Visit filmlosophers.com whenever your spider sense starts to tingle.
That's right. We got a website. We got all 140 episodes. This will be lesson 141. I'm sorry. This will be lesson 142 as we talk about Spider-Man, but you can check out all 141 episodes that we've talked about prior to all on filmlosophers.com.
And we've got a few other things in there, too. We got some extra credit segments. Extra interviews. I mean, just a plethora of content.
We've got the one-stop shop for all your movie needs. We're like Blockbuster.
Except hopefully we won't be crushed by Netflix.
And we're still open. But that directs us right into our segment where we will be talking about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. This has been one of the more talked about films of the year because of the fact that it was released, or the information of the film was released during that Sony hack, when all the emails from all the higher executives and whatnot were released to the public. And it was amongst the emails stated that there was going to be a Miles Morales film in the works through Sony. So there's been a lot of talk. I think that hack happened like, what, 2014, 2015?
It was a while ago.
Either way, we finally got the film here, and it's now in theaters, and we got a chance to check it out, and we are all excited to talk about it. So, Chad, while you're dancing, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness? That's
sorry, that's the way the movie starts, basically. It's great. Miles Morales is a New York teen struggling with school, friends, and on top of that, being the new Spider-Man. When he comes across Peter Parker, the erstwhile savior of a New York from another universe, Miles must train and work with his new counterparts from other dimensions to stop a danger that threatens to destroy every reality.
How's that one work out for you guys?
I give it 50% accuracy rating.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
There's a little... It glosses over and or reconfigures a few things, but it's not wrong.
Yeah, which is actually an improvement.
Good, because I had to write that one. Directed by Bob Persichetti, Peter Ramsey, and Rodney Rothman, the film stars Shameik Moore as Miles Morales alongside Jake Johnson, Haley Steinfeld, Mahershala Ali, Brian Tyree Henry, Lily Tomlin, Luna Lauren Velez, John Mulaney, Nicolas Cage, and Liv Schreiber. That's a lot of people.
That's not even all of them. That track was from Post Malone. Post Malone has a credited extra speaking part.
It's true. That's very true.
Chris Pine is the first voice that you hear, but he's not credited here.
That's true. The film's completion of the animation required up to 140 animators, the largest crew ever used by Sony Pictures Animation for any film. So that's actually pretty cool, seeing as how there's a huge focus in the film to make it look like the comic book aesthetic, and it just really hits that out of the park for this particular film. So to see that they actually put the work and the time into it, that actually is translated well on screen.
Yeah, there is so much intricate visual detail and richness in basically every frame of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like sometimes it plays with the comic book aesthetic more than others. Other times it's like shifting your perspective, like what's up and down and what, I mean, it's just, it's very visually complex and I would say appealing. I think obviously if I had like overly sensitive eyes or something, there are a few sequences that probably mm-hmm. would, you know, maybe trigger. I know some people with bright flashing lights, you know, that triggers an epileptic, you know, kind of moment. And I can see there are a couple of spots in the film where that might be the case, but by and large, like, it is gorgeous. I'm glad that they invested in having 140 animators on the film, because I think the complexity of the visuals alone says a lot about how much they're trying to really take care of the intellectual property of Spider-Man and specifically Miles Morales.
What do you think, Spence?
I think this movie was gorgeous. It just like grabs you. Like even with company logos, normally I'm like, oh, let's go. But even those kind of got me into it. I'm like, ooh, this is going to be really something.
That's actually really something unique to point out, because of the fact that at the even at the get-go, like right when the movie starts and there is the
Columbia Pictures is the first one,
and you see all the different iterations of the female character in the logo, it's really cool the way they've like they switch it out really quick with all these different variations of like female empowerment and all these other things. And it was really cool to see how that motif continued. It wasn't just like a one-time deal, and it's like, oh, this, you know, this production studio has this one, but everybody else has their own, like mm-hmm. every single one of them carried the same motif. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, so one of the main story components of the movie is that you have spider individuals from different realities all kind of grouped together in this one reality, and they're working together, and the ones that are not from this one originally, they glitch. So sometimes they very similar almost to how Vanellope Sweets will do in Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah.
They glitch for a minute. And so that's the way that the entire movie starts, is with the production studio's logos glitching into different forms of themselves.
Almost
so you're in the mode before you ever even meet a character.
Yeah, it's almost like the logos are glitching into like alternate dimension realities of themselves. Yeah. So that's actually a really cool little Easter egg at the very beginning. The film actually received a nomination for Best Animated Feature Film at the 76th Golden Globe Award. So the Golden Globe Award nominees were announced this, I believe this past week.
Yeah, like a couple weeks ago.
And they were at the top of the list. In fact, there's a few categories that they actually have a stake in. So it's pretty great to see that, you know, animated films, especially in the comic book genre, mm-hmm. are finally getting recognition, especially kind of a side note. Films like Black Panther is getting a lot of recognition this year too as well. So to see comic book films be taken a little bit more seriously than just films for kids, or, you know, they're just throwaway films. They're just, you know, those action-packed, you know, summer blockbusters that nobody really talks about. They're being taken seriously, and that's really cool. It was announced shortly after Stan Lee's death at age 95 that he had recorded a cameo for the film and that it would be his final voice acting role. And he does have a cameo in the film, and I think, in all honesty, we'll probably talk about it a little bit more at length, but I thought it was fitting for how that cameo worked out for him, and so it's great seeing the remnants of what he still has for his fans.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause we just recently saw Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Yep.
Lesson 139.
Oh, you're going to test me. Now I'm moving between different tabs on my computer.
It was lesson 138.
Yes.
But even seeing him in there so shortly after the fact when he passed, it was really great seeing it. It was kind of, it's kind of a cathartic to see, to be able to see him, even though everything that had passed and everything that was going on, to kind of still like, oh, okay, we're still going to have an opportunity to still say goodbye in certain mediums and whatnot.
Honestly, it is just a cameo appearance, mm-hmm. but it ties into one of the main threads of the story. Like, one of the main takeaways that you as a member of the audience should have, because it's restated in a different way in the end by the main character, Miles Morales himself, mm-hmm. essentially is a restating of a version of what the Stan Lee character says in the film.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really special because Stan Lee, for basically the entire run of his career, after the creation of Spider-Man, I mean, Spider-Man is his biggest claim to fame in the sense mm-hmm. of, like, it's the character that he resonated with the most, that he thought was most representative of, like, the everyman, like, do-gooder who just wants to get up every time you're knocked down and continue helping people, and, you know, it doesn't matter what's thrown at you, you're gonna respond and respond well. So he had an affinity for the character. So it's really cool to see it wasn't just a cameo appearance the way that we're used to seeing cameo appearances.
Yeah.
What they had him say was very meaningful and directly tied to one of the, you know, almost like Aesop's fable like threads of the story.
Very true. So, like we said, we got a chance to see the film. We got a chance to really engage with it. And actually, Chad saw it twice.
He did.
I forced him to go the second time with me. But it's one of those types of films where, obviously, so like we've talked about, there are a lot of adaptations this year. And this is one of those instances where this film is, this is adapted from a run of the Spider-Man storyline with the particular character of Miles Morales. Now, I am very briefly understandable of the of this run. I'm not too familiar with it. Spencer, do you have any familiarity with the Miles Morales storyline?
No.
Oh, let me crack my knuckles.
Well, seeing as we do have a resident comic book expert, let me go ahead and swing this mic over to Mr. Riley. Chad, why don't you give us a little bit of backstory on Mr. Miles Morales?
I'll give you a little backstory. I'll keep it very brief.
By all means.
Because I do want to talk about this movie. This is actually adapted from a few different story threads. Miles, as a character, was introduced in the Ultimate Universe, which was started in the early 2000s. It was sort of a... if Marvel Comics had not created all of their main characters until the modern age, how would those characters have come out differently? Like, if Wolverine was introduced in, I don't know, 1998 or whenever they started the line, if the Avengers were first formed as an arm of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is the, you know, Marvel Universe paramilitary group, and they weren't called the Avengers at all, they were called the Ultimates. And, you know, how were they different? Like, Thor was very different. He was potentially a mentally ill, like, mental hospital patient that had escaped, who thought he was a Norse god of thunder or whatever. But so there were a lot of different tweaks that were done to the different characters. Ultimate Spider-Man, what people loved about Ultimate Spider-Man, Peter Parker, Ultimate Spider-Man, was that he was back to being a high schooler. Like, he was back to being, like, his origin age. And to relive that in a different way in a modern context was really fun and interesting. But about, I don't know, 10 years in or so, the decision was made to kill off Ultimate Peter Parker. So the Peter Parker of the Ultimate Universe was killed off. And then Miles Morales was introduced as the new Ultimate Spider-Man. Now, since then, Miles Morales has found his way into the Prime Universe, what they call 616 in Marvel Comics. And there have been a plethora of other alternate spider people that have been introduced. So, and several of them are in this movie as well, from different storylines and whatnot. But the idea basically is they come from different versions of reality, and so their power set may be different. They may be Like instead of Peter Parker, sometimes it's a different character from the Spider-Man mythos, mm-hmm. Or it's just a different version altogether. They've had like, you know, Uncle Ben, who famously dies trying to do the right thing, and he instills in Peter, his nephew, with great power comes great responsibility. In some alternate universes, Ben actually gets bit by the spider, and it's Ben who is the Spider-Man. One of the characters you meet in this movie that was made very recently is Gwen Stacy as Spider-Woman. So, or Spider-Gwen, or now they have given her even another name. And all the cosplayers went crazy because of the character design is so cool with her hood and the inlaid spider pattern inside the hood and whatever, like just a great character design. But Miles Morales, the thing that was really unique when they introduced him, number one, he was replacing Peter Parker as the Spider-Man of the Ultimate Universe. He was once again a young person, a middle school, high school aged person, which he is in this movie. And he's biracial. He's Latino and African American. Yep. And that was an important element. It made the news, like the news, not just like comic book nerd people like us who follow news online, but like it was on, you know, Today Show and Good Morning America and in USA Today, I believe, you know, when they were announcing a biracial Spider-Man character, which is one of Marvel's marquee characters, has been for 70 years or so. So his introduction was a big deal. I will say before we dive into the movie that the way that his origin is handled in the movie is different than the way that his origin is handled in the comics, because of how they're setting up something else that they're also borrowing from a popular storyline, which is the idea of the Spider-Verse. So multiple universes is a common story angle for especially like sci-fi or fantasy, you know, the more fantastical types of stories. But about 5 years ago or so, they did an entire crossover of multiple universes, and they called it, you know, the Spider-Verse, because all the only ones, what was happening was there were predators from outside of the multiverse. There were predators who were preying upon the spider individuals of each reality. And so all the spider individuals of each reality had to come together to defeat these more archetypal predator figures.
Okay.
And preserve the multiverse, but they were very specifically the spider people were the ones who were being targeted. And so the idea of all the spider characters coming together as part of the Spider-Verse, that comes from a different storyline than the origin of Miles Morales as Spider-Man, but here in the movie they're blended together in a way that is really quite fun.
I see. So, with that said, let's talk about expectations. And I'm going to go ahead and start with Mr. Spencer, seeing as we're going from information of the source material to having more knowledge about the source material. So, I wanted to kind of throw it to you and see what your expectations were without having so much knowledge of everything that Chad had just mentioned prior.
Okay. So, actually, like, several years ago, it's not that far back, when Marvel was like, okay, everyone, we have Spider-Man rights to make a movie. I was like, ooh, Peter Parker is back. And I was like, for a third time, like, we've already done two of them. You're rebooting this again? Like, I know you haven't done this, but it'd be nice to see something different. Because I knew there were other spider people. I didn't know much about them. But I was like, I would really be interested in someone who's not Peter Parker and just like what their life is about. And upon seeing this movie, this is the movie I wanted to see then, because this movie is amazing. Like, I went into this just expecting to really learn about Miles, because I really knew nothing about him or any of the other Spider people besides just like names of stuff. So, you know, going into it, I was really open to like seeing something different, and that's what this movie is, something different in like the best way possible.
And it's different. It's not just different from other Spider-Man movies. It's not just different from other comic book movie based movies. This movie is a very unique experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole feel and flow of it is ridiculously refreshing. It's like, wait a minute, why weren't we doing this all the time earlier? This is brilliant.
I know. Like, I'm very excited already for like a follow up to this movie.
Yeah.
Like, I'm waiting for that now. That's what I'm sitting for. As soon as like Infinity War Part 2 is over.
Yeah.
Or Endgame.
Endgame. It has a name now.
Get it right, Spence. So one of the things, I totally second what Spencer was saying, because the moment they had mentioned that they were going to be doing a Miles Morales film, the first thought was, well, because the Tom Holland Homecoming film hadn't come out yet by that time, so it was, well, we'll see how Homecoming works, and we'll kind of get a sense of like where they're going to go in direction for Spider-Man. Because in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, they're going to keep them all in the same universe. They're going to try to build in that aspect. And then you hear it's an animated film, and you're then thinking like, okay, well.
And they said it was in continuity. Like, it's considered canon with the MCU films. And there was a big question mark of like, how are they going to pull that off?
Yeah.
Because Peter Parker Spider-Man is a high schooler.
Mm-hmm.
Miles Morales, who's supposed to be several years after that, should be a high school, middle school, high school student. So how are they going to do it? And cleverly, they've introduced the concept of a multiverse. So that kind of addresses that concern or answers that question.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it addresses, or I think it adds more questions to me, because I was really hoping, just in all honesty, we weren't going to get another Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. Not that he was a bad Spider-Man, that's not what I'm saying, but to say, like, once that third film hit in that trilogy, you were like, yeah, they've peaked. Like, this is as good as it's going to get over here.
That walk down the street of him dancing, that was the peak moment right there.
Yeah.
And then you go to Andrew Garfield's The Amazing Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was okay up until the second one, when it got ridiculous.
Agreed.
With all the characters and everything happening, and you're supposed to care about everything happening all at once. And you don't. That just got too much as well. So, and then we have the Tom Holland Spider-Man, which it's fun. He seems fun. He seems right for the part.
Mm-hmm.
But we've only seen limited exposure at the time to what he could be. We've seen him when he was in Civil War, when he was going to have him in the film, his own solo film. And so recognizing that universe that's being created, I'm hoping, okay, let's hope that the echelon, if you will, of Spider-Man films continues to grow, because any more setbacks, and I feel like we need to stop making the same mistake over and over, and just, if we can't make it, just give it back to Marvel, give it back to the people who made it. And you know, so my hope, my expectation was, I wanted it to be good. I heard it was good from other people. I just didn't want to see, in a bad way, another Spider-Man 3 or Amazing Spider-Man 2. So that's it. That's honestly all I had. I'm not too versed in like the comic books or the storyline or the backstory. I've perused here and there. I wasn't too fixated on it. But I know movies. And for me, I know when there's a franchise or there's an IPO that's like just really struggling to get off the ground, i.e. Fantastic Four or Fan Four Stick. You're looking at a too property soon. Who is constantly trying to be brought back from the dead, and it keeps falling back on the ground. And it's like, all right, if it's not going to work, then just stop trying to make it work and wait till the right moment. That's kind of the case that I've been seeing with like Spider-Man. And like I said, Tom Holland's doing well so far, but we've only seen one film of him solo and his part in Civil War. What else is to come?
And Infinity War, too.
And yeah. Infinity War, you're right. So yeah, that was at the brunt of what I was thinking in terms of expectations.
I'm going to deviate for a quick second.
By all means.
Because I think that I grew up reading comics. I grew up specifically reading Marvel comics. And Spider-Man is like the... If you had to whittle down kind of the heart and message of Marvel comics, at least what it was when it really started to accelerate. I don't know about nowadays. It would be something different, like Cosmic Ghost Rider or something ridiculous. But a great series, by the way. But Spider-Man is the one you'd be left with.
Yeah.
There's no question. Now, from the outside looking in, you know, it could be debatable, like Wolverine's more popular or Deadpool now is more popular or whatever. Captain America is more patriotic and Iron Man is, you know, techier or whatever. But, like, Spider-Man is the beating heart of the Marvel Universe on paper in comics. And to try to get that right is a big challenge. At the surface, it should be really, really easy because you've got, I don't know how many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of issues to pull from and say, these are the best. Let's adapt those. What Sam Raimi and his team did in the first trilogy with Tobey Maguire was they leaned into the humor of Spider-Man in a campy way, and then they like very much tried to balance it with an equal bewildering darkness in the bad guys. And you kind of ended up, like, as a major fan of the comics, that first film, I'm glad it did so well. I'm glad it spawned a franchise. I'm glad that Spider-Man continues to be a well-known character, a well-known IP, intellectual property. But I thought that it was off base. Like, I didn't honestly like the first movie. I didn't like the first trilogy. I was like, why did they make him so laughable? It was like watching the 1960s Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
And there's no reason to do that because Spider-Man at his core, those stories are actually most of the time very serious. He has a lighthearted way of dealing with it. But there are big themes and, you know, anyway, there's more gravitas. There's more weight to the kind of person he is under all the, you know, suit and everything, than what we saw most of the time in that first trilogy. However, if the first trilogy hadn't gone well, then we wouldn't be talking about Spider-Man today.
True. Very true.
So for this film, introducing a new Spider-Man, a different starting point. It's not Peter Parker, it's Miles Morales.
Yeah.
And it is a modern day character. Like, Miles was just created less than a decade, or around a decade ago, I think, maybe 8 to 10 years. So he's not a very old character on paper compared to most of the characters that we've seen on screen. There's a lot still to be determined about his path in the books and on screen. And so it was a really cool choice for them to say, okay, well, we're going to do a Spider-Man animated movie, but it's going to be this Spider-Man. And a few others, by the way. I thought it was a brilliant idea because it shows the variety. I mean, the thing that Stan Lee said for decades and decades and decades is that Spider-Man, Peter Parker, is the everyman of the Marvel Universe. So one of the things that they've started to explore in the comics is, okay, then let's make a version of Spider-something that fits everything. They've got a British punk rock Spider-Man. They've got, like, well, in this movie, they've got like a Japanese anime, you know, like Gundam, mini Gundam kind of Spider-Man. I mean,
Spider-Man.
They've got one for everyone.
I was going to ask you, is there an actual?
I think she's unique to this movie. I could be wrong because. Okay. The Spider-Verse thing has been done twice now, and I only followed the first one, which was about 5 years ago. The new one that happened over the summer this year, I didn't really follow. So she might have appeared at some point, and I missed her. But there are a lot of spider people throughout the multiverse. There are a lot of them. So, but that all plays into the everyman aspect of the character. Like, why shouldn't... you know, why shouldn't a manga-loving 10-year-old in Japan look at Spider-Man and see herself? Yeah. Like, I can help people the way that person helps people. It's not the strength and the speed and the web-slinging that makes him a hero. It's the heart that beats inside. And that, with Spider-Man, has come through more clear than probably any other character in comics. they routinely make sure that you understand that about him through his origin all the way up through whatever challenges he faces. And so now they've really leaned into the whole, like, well, if a 10-year-old girl in Japan who loves, you know, tinkering with robots or whatever, were to see herself in the heroic vein of Spider-Man, what would that look like? And so they've explored it in different ways on page and then now on screen. So I was really looking forward to the film. And between having the film kind of spoilery introduced, right? Like, nobody knew it was going on until the emails leaked.
Mm-hmm.
And when the emails leaked, there was nothing to show yet. But then once you finally saw the trailers, you really immediately got a sense for the vibe and the visual aesthetic and just like the stuff that really makes it stand out as an animated film,
yeah.
Regardless of if it's Spider-Man. Like, it stands out stylistically as a really well-made movie.
Oh, completely.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that came through from the beginning of when the trailers started coming out.
Yeah. Well, jumping right into the film, you're obviously introduced to the real quick current Spider-Man of this universe, played by Chris Pine, which I honestly...
Almost played by Tobey Maguire.
Which...
Was it really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were trying to work something out for a little while.
That would have been amazing.
That would not have been amazing. I would have been like... it would have been like one of those PTSD moments where I've been triggered back into like... him walking down the street doing the little things and the finger pointing.
He did that in this movie.
So, okay, let's take a step back. Before we're introduced to the actual characters, there is a great opening sequence where the film actually does a pretty good homage to the previous Spider-Man films, where they have the scene where he's holding on to he's keeping the train from falling off the tracks from Spider-Man Part 2. You have the scene where he's dancing in his regular Spider-Man outfit. He's not in all black and jazz hands or whatever, but they do have him doing that scene in the film in his Spider-Man outfit, and it's funny, which is from Spider-Man 3. There's a couple other scenes where he does something that's very similar to the films prior. Mm-hmm. But that's a really good... I think that's a really good jumping point for a lot of the people who are like, oh, well, it's just... kind of like what we were saying. Oh, this is just another Spider-Man movie. It's going to be just like the other ones, blah, blah, blah. I think this is a good way to kind of lay that olive branch for those that kind of still hold true to those ones and are like, oh, those are the best ones. These are blah, blah, blah. This is to say, well, we still respect those films. We're just going to have fun with ours. And I thought that was really smart, because if there's one thing that is always talked about whenever you talk about Spider-Man movies,
yep,
it's... emo Spider-Man, emo Tobey Maguire, yep. And the fact that they actually threw that in there, that scene in there, and had fun with it, I think that says something. It's not poking at it. It's just saying, hey, we recognize this happened. Even in the film, the voiceover work, it says, yeah, we don't talk about that time that much. And it's like, it's true. We don't, you know, it's, yeah. But
well, and they have a way of rushing you through the origin story because they know that you've seen it a billion times, right? And mm-hmm. And you actually get a flavor of every one of the spider people that's in this movie. You get a version of an origin montage kind of worked through really quickly in a lively manner that doesn't bore you.
Very true.
Despite it being like repeated quite often, like I didn't get tired of that. Like,
well, and they start every one of them with, okay, for the last time, this is how it all started, you know, like a version of that. All of them say that.
Which was really fun, I think, because when you have a film like this where you're introducing so many different elements, such as different types of Spider-Men and Spider-Women.
And Spider-Ham.
And Spider-Ham. You need to have that unique, real quick, concise backstory fill to say, hey, for those that don't know, like myself, I raise my hand. Spencer, raise your hand too.
Okay.
Raise it. Thank you. No, but to have those instances where you're like, yes, this is something new that you may not know about. So here's a quick, real quick, you know, backstory bio of this person. And it's done in a fun way. I think that's kind of the running theme for this film, is it has fun with the property. And sadly, that's kind of the thing that's lacking with other properties, other films in other brands,
mm-hmm.
Where... you lose the idea of having fun within your property, and you lose the property itself. You lose the fan base. Spider-Man is one of those ones that, although he's very quick-witted and he has a very smart mouth and he's super fun and he's annoying to his enemies, he still gets the job done and he still does it very well. And he's still focused on being that everyman, the last man standing, always fighting. We kind of talked about this when we did the review for Homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
Where
less than 70, by the way.
There you go. Where Chad really talked at length of how much Spider-Man represents that everyman aspect, the person who will fight until every single person is either safe or he can protect every single person that's there. He's the one who doesn't stay down. And I think that theme runs through this film as well.
Absolutely.
In terms of just the recognizing like some of the Spider-Man themes. But as we jump into the characters that are introduced, we're given a slew of awesome performances from, obviously, Miles Morales, who's played by Shameik Moore. If you're not familiar with Shameik Moore, Shameik Moore was the one of the kids in Dope, the movie that came out in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
He was also on a Netflix series. You are introduced as well to his uncle, Uncle Aaron, which was played previously by Donald Glover. Oh, yeah. In Homecoming, mm-hmm. Spider-Man Homecoming, but in this
one, is why Donald Glover's on the TV screen for a quick second.
That is very true, and that's in one of the scenes. But he's played by Mahershala Ali. I always have trouble.
Mahershala
Ali. But he voices Aaron in the film. You also get a slew of other individuals, such as Peter Parker from another universe, voiced by Jake Johnson. You got Gwen Stacy, voiced by Haley Steinfeld. You have Chad's favorite, you know, actor and performer, Nicolas Cage, voicing
Spider-Man. Whole lot of nope. Although this is probably my favorite role that I've ever had an encounter with Nicolas Cage, because you don't have to see him and he doesn't talk a whole lot. And it really kind of fits the nonsense that typically comes out of Nicolas Cage's mouth, whatever role he's in. You know, like, it really actually fits him.
Yeah. I don't know if it was just like that opening scene in Uncle Aaron's apartment where you see that Community episode happening on his screen.
Uh-huh.
But I had Abed's mind in my mind, his version of Nicolas Cage.
Oh, gosh.
When I was
so
listening
good.
To all the things that Nicolas Cage was saying in this film. I'm like, yep.
Abed's Nicolas Cage impersonation is one of my favorite things I've ever seen on television.
It's true. Have you seen it, Spence?
No.
You're going to have to see it. So Nicolas Cage plays Spider-Man, voices Spider-Man Noir. Obviously, like Chad was saying, you get Spider-Ham, who is voiced by John Mulaney.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Gwen Stacy. Oh, I already mentioned is voiced by Haley Steinfeld. There's a slew of other great voice actors in the film. You have Aunt May, who is voiced by Lily Tomlin, which did a phenomenal job. You have so many others. Either way.
And your big bad is Wilson Fisk, who, if you've been following any of the Marvel TV shows on Netflix, Fisk is played by Vincent D'Onofrio. In this film, the character of Fisk is voiced by Liev Schreiber.
Schreiber.
Who previously played a version of Sabretooth in
a film we know not speak of.
Wolverine Origins.
But you get a slew of all these great performers, and I think one of the great things about this film is it doesn't feel like anybody seems out of place. A lot of the voice actors, you get certain instances where certain voice actors don't fit the bill, and you can tell they're like, they don't either understand their character or they're just not right for the part. It's happened before. We've seen it in countless other films. The voice acting sounds stale, stagnant. It just doesn't fit. I was really actually honestly concerned about two voice actors in this film because I wasn't sure if they were going to work really well for my own liking. One of them being just Nicolas Cage, because sometimes he can get a little woody and his voice becomes a little stale and non-animated. And so that was one, just naturally. Mm-hmm. But my other one was Jake Johnson. I'm not a big fan of Jake Johnson in terms of like his humor. He does a lot of like his natural cadence when he talks.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't like fit my type of humor. And I feel like listening to him play Spider-Man was going to be probably one of the more excruciating things about the film. And in all honesty, I actually enjoyed him. His isms, if you will, were to a minimum, and he did a great job voicing Spider-Man.
Jaded Spider-Man. Yeah, he's an older Spider-Man. He's approaching middle age. He's got a bit of a gut. His marriage to MJ didn't quite work out in his reality, and so there's some of that world weary kind of tone, but still with the lighthearted spin that if you're truly embracing the character of Peter Parker, no matter how dim the world around you looks, like there's still going to be that spark of brightness to the way that he interacts with that darkness. And I thought that it was an interesting choice. I wasn't sure when they announced, Jake Johnson as the Peter Parker, because nobody knew that there would be any other Peter Parkers in the story. So as far as we knew, he was Peter Parker, and then there was Miles Morales, and then other unnamed characters in the story. So Chris Pine doing a version of Peter Parker in addition to Jake Johnson's, that wasn't known. I was like, what? The guy from New Girl?
Yeah.
That's an interesting choice. I don't know that makes a lot of sense, but seeing the version of Peter Parker that they have him voicing, it works really well.
It does, because he's, like Chad said, he's very down and out. He's struggling. He's having issues in his universe with his persona, with his own self, self-motivation and so forth. And so it really works with the way his tone, his cadence, rolls off his tongue, the way he talks, the way he says certain things. It fits him naturally. So it actually worked for me.
That's like the meanest compliment I've ever heard. It's like, hey, your voice sounds like out of prime Peter Parker.
That's a backhanded compliment.
There you go. And so I think, in all honesty, I think that was one of the highlights for me. I actually liked his performance. I don't know, but what about you, Spence? Was there any of the voice actors that really stuck out to you?
No, I was just really just wanting to see what Nicolas Cage was going to do with this movie. Because I was concerned that any scene with him would immediately just go into nonsense, which can be fun a lot of the times, especially if that's what you're trying to do. But I was just kind of worried about things going off the rails. But I feel like someone knew that very well and pushed him into the background.
Use sparingly.
Yeah, that's basically what they did with him. Because I think of all the Spider people, it was him and Spider Ham that probably got not as much screen time as other Spider people did, which would probably be for the better.
It's true. There was more of a focus between Gwen Stacy, Peter Parker, and Miles. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think the amount of Nicolas Cage in this film, it's like salt. Like, you can't add too much salt to a dish, because then it gets really out of whack and you can't eat it. It's non-palatable. But just enough, and it just adds the right amount of flavor. I think that's the case with Nicolas Cage. Yeah, you just need to use him sparingly.
Well,
he's like that spice that your parents just tell you, don't use too much of it, because then you're going to ruin your meal.
No, you can have some fantastic movies if you just put too much Nicolas Cage in it.
No, you
Face
can't.
Face Off. Amazing.
No, no.
Masterwork right
Here's
there.
The other thing they did with his character. They made him kind of a sideshow. Like, they leaned into the fact that he comes from a black and white world. And so he doesn't know, when he sees colors, he doesn't know what they're called. Like, he doesn't know the proper name for the individual colors, because he doesn't live in a world with color.
Yeah.
He lives in a black and white world. So kind of just playing up the novelty effect of where he comes from and limiting him to mostly that actually works really well.
Well,
because he still says some bonkers things.
He does. Some of the things that come out of his mouth are like, wait, what? Some really weird 40s or 50s insult Bolly Wonkers or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
something ridiculous.
You can't even parrot it because you've never heard it before.
Exactly. It's like, I don't think I'm going to be able to remember that for the show. Like, I actually remember thinking that out loud. Like, I don't think I'm going to remember that. What did he say? And I think since we're talking about the different characters, I think it's so great how they made the animation for each individual one unique to the universe they're from. So you have Gwen Stacy, who looks very much like the rest of them because they had introduced Gwen earlier into the film as somebody who's already there. Peter Parker, the other universe Peter Parker, he looks the same. But then you get into the manga anime style of the little girl and her spider robot. And that's very much in the style of anime with a little touch of 3D, but it's very much in the style of anime. You have Spider-Man Noir, who is extremely like two-tone. He's black and white. And it's almost like it's like a newsprint. Like he's one-dimensional. He looks one-dimensional at times. And then you get Spider-Ham. And Spider-Ham is literally this cartoon in a really well-done animated film with, as a whole, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. But Spider-Ham is literally a cartoon pulling out mallets from his pocket and like doing ridiculous stuff, dropping anvils on people's heads. So I loved how they made sure to keep each one of those correct to the universe they're from and the style that they, you know, hold tight to. So that was pretty fun to see visually. I think that's one of the biggest things that should be really recognized with this film is, we mentioned it earlier, the 140 animators that were put onto this film to finish it. The level of care and just research and knowledge that was put into this film and time and effort, it shows. Like, absolutely. No doubt. This is the same company who put out the Emoji Movie.
What? They did the Emoji Movie?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Sony Animation Studios.
I tried to learn as little as that movie as possible. That's probably why.
Knowing that, and then knowing a year or two later, I think it was a year, they come out with something so phenomenal like this, it's like, what happened? Like, who'd you have to fire and bring in to make this work?
Yeah, no, I mean, you watch this movie, and I know that sometimes we exaggerate a little bit for dramatic effect, or it sounds very hyperbolic, but watching this movie, I mean, I was watching it, and yeah, there are some sequences that move a little too fast for my aging eyes and whatnot, but I really thought, like, oh, this is a new standard. Like, this is a new standard for what animated films can do. It's similar to when you saw some of the early major successes of Pixar animation, right? Where it was an animated movie, but it was animated differently than hand illustration. And there was some physical, like, there was a feeling behind it. That was, you know, Toy Story looked different. It was an animated movie, but it looked different than any other animated movie you'd ever seen.
Yeah.
And you had a great story to boot. And here you've got, I mean, as you mentioned, there's sometimes it's 2D, sometimes it's 3D, sometimes it's kind of both.
Yeah.
And they play with it like from one half second to the next half second. In the same scene, it'll shift around and do things. Like, there's so much talent at play every second, basically, in this movie. I mean, it really is a new standard. Not to say that it's perfect, but as far as a first outing of a collection of stylistic choices that we've not really seen before, it is darn impressive.
It's true. And I'm looking through and seeing some of the things where the directors themselves actually have done prior to, and it looks as though only one of them, yeah. So it looks like this film was the directorial debut for Rodney Rothman and Bob Persichetti. But Peter Ramsey, I don't know if you guys ever remembered a movie, it was called Rise of the Guardians.
Oh yeah.
So he actually directed that.
Oh, okay.
Which Rise of the Guardians
is that the owl one or the like holiday creature one?
Holiday creature.
Okay.
One. The one that has
with Chris Pine.
Yeah.
As a voice.
Chris Pine, Hugh Jackman,
The Easter Bunny,
yeah. He played the Easter Bunny. But that story alone, Rise of the Guardians, which is based on an incredible kids book series that if you ever get the chance to read it, that story is beautiful in itself, and it's told really well. So seeing as you have somebody like that who can help encapsulate a great story and really tell it, and then two individuals who are visually incredible in the visual arts departments for most of these films, it's no surprise to me that putting those three heads together with the 140 animators from Sony, it's like it's the best concoction for a great animated film in this endeavor. And it doesn't just touch on like, oh, we're going to try something experimental and just go whatever. It fits with the brand of type of character Miles Morales is. Mm-hmm. In the environment that he's in, he's not in upscale New York, he's in Brooklyn. He lives in this, you know, in this apartment. His dad's is a police officer. His mom is Puerto Rican. He's half black, half Puerto Rican. This is the life that he lives. And it just, the film does a great, beautiful, just mixture of color and beauty in how it portrays all that. It's not just like, oh, we're going to oversaturate everything with all these colors and make people go nuts and, you know, incite all these, you know, epileptic moments in theaters. Mm-hmm. No. It creates beautiful music through the color that it creates. And I think one of the things visually that it does is it does something so brand new in, it tells the story more so visually than it does through the words it speaks, in my mind, personally. I don't know. What do you think, Spence?
Well, I think, one, it's just like, it's amazing that this movie doesn't look like a hot mess because of all the tricks they're trying to do.
It's very, that's very true.
Like, they're doing so much, and, like, it works, like, 95% of the time. There's a few, like, little tiny things, but it's just done so well that it's kind of just, like, while I was watching, I was like, I can't believe I'm watching this because it was done that well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's true. Like, we're watching it at the theater, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I feel choked up because, like, you're mm-hmm. watching this film, and it just looks so beautiful, and there's so much care and so much work put into it. I didn't know that there was 140 animators. I was just like, okay, maybe Sony like outsourced it. Maybe they partnered with like, you know, some subsidiary of Marvel, and Marvel came in and did wonders or whatever. I don't know. But I was thinking like, this couldn't have been Sony. And sure enough, you find out 140 animators, and you had great visual storytellers in terms of the directing team. And it's like, okay, that makes sense. This is a property that they put the time and effort and the means necessary to make this work. And it does.
Absolutely. And you brought up earlier how different spider characters from other universes have a specific animation style when they're in Miles Morales' world. But also, like, the different bad guys have different...
That's true.
...feels. Like... When they're in the shot, when they're in the sequence, the sequence works differently with Wilson Fisk in it, or with Dr. Octopus in it, or with Green Goblin in it, or with Prowler especially. Prowler gets some very stylized mm-hmm. animation every time you see him. So it's just, you know, it's all of the attention to detail that went into this. It is so impressive. You mentioned that I happened to see it twice. I think that one of the things that stood out to me the second time was picking up on some of the nuances of like, oh, this scene moves at a different pace because of the characters in the scene and the way they move.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing what you can do with live action superhero films in the modern day with the CGI and the stunt work and everything. It's incredible. But to get the sense of like what you've seen in comic books all the time and to have something come to life animated with such a fast pace sometimes, it feels even more authentic in some ways than what we've been able to replicate on a live action set with a lot of CGI.
Yeah.
And I'm not knocking any of those because I want those movies to continue. But this is a whole new avenue that could be explored for years and years and years if they pay this much attention and put this much craft and quality into future products. I'll keep shelling out dollars for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and this may be a bold statement, but I think it's worth saying, just solely based on this particular film here, if this sets the new standard for how they continue to move forward with their animated features and the care, like you're saying, the care and the the thoughtfulness and the investment behind it, they could very well begin to rival like Pixar Studios, DreamWorks. They would begin to rival, you know, even what Walt Disney Animation Studios is putting out, because of the fact that the only thing those companies have is they have great storytelling and care and time that they put into the animation that they do behind the scenes in the film. I've had a chance to go and visit Pixar Studios, and the guys that they have working on those teams, they spend days upon weeks working on something so small and minute, most moviegoers probably won't see it. But the fact that they have such a lengthy process to work on, there's a particular animator at Pixar, his whole job was to work on Ramon from Cars 3. And his thing was, he had an issue with the way the exhaust pipe looked on Ramon, on the back of Ramon's car, or on the back of Ramon. And so he spent 2 weeks working on this tailpipe to make it look so correct because of the way the car actually looks and the way that the design looked, and he wanted it to look according to how the car actually worked out. And when it was done, he said he loved it, his bosses loved it, and we probably have gone and seen the film several times on you know, TV and whatnot, and probably haven't even noticed it.
Yeah, the shape of the exhaust pipe.
Yeah, but the fact that it's that much type
Somebody put thought into it.
Exactly. And so thinking of that, if that's how Sony is going to start working from here moving forward and using this as the standard, I could say they may be able to start rivaling all of those other studios that are putting out the quality work that they've been putting out for years.
Yeah, and I think it bears mentioning too, as much as we can, you know, salivate over great movie making and good entertainment value, as a comic book enthusiast, it's also a great Spider-Man story.
Oh, completely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, it's an incredible Spider-Man story. They did a fantastic job taking some of the best aspects of the source material and translating them into a new medium that we really haven't seen. I mean, yeah, there have been animated series of Spider-Man, and there have been live-action films of Spider-Man, but, like, this particular format is new.
Yeah.
And they made a great Spider-Man story with it.
I agree. And so I think another couple things that just to kind of talk about is going back to the storytelling. So we've mentioned that obviously when you create a film based on source material that's already pre-existing, you have something to base it on. People have already seen or read the story, understood the story. They know where it's coming from. Like Chad's mentioned, this film pulls from several different entities to create this film and the storyline in here. But the basis of any film that's adapted from anywhere is to give respect to the source material. And the way this film structures its story, I could tell, personally, I could tell there were different elements from different storylines, but it felt very cohesive. Mm-hmm. Like the fluidity of the story ran seamless from beginning all the way to end. And if I hadn't had any kind of precursory knowledge of some comics already, I wouldn't be able to say, oh, well, that's the Spider-Verse run that they did. This is Miles Morales, obviously, in the beginning when they first do the introductions, so forth and blah, blah, blah. But the fact that the film runs so seamless, like the story is fluid from beginning to end. There's no moment in this film that I'm like, yeah, we could probably speed this up or we could probably do without. Mm-hmm. I actually enjoyed every single moment in this film. And every moment felt like a moment that I had to keep on hand or keep at the forefront of my mind because it was going to connect to the next scene. And that's just great storytelling, mm-hmm. honestly. I mean, from the team that they had on hand for this particular film, Phil Lord and Rodney Rothman. If you're unfamiliar with Phil Lord is the guy who did the Lego movie as well as like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. He's done a couple other series, but the more well-known ones. But knowing that somebody like Phil Lord is on this type of film, it's really great to see that much level of care and consideration put into that storytelling, that form of storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you get that really strong sense of comedic timing that sometimes in an animated film is really hard. Like,
yeah,
animated films are so controlled from like a sound booth, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because what you're capturing, the audio you're capturing, and then the animation's happening separately, and you blend them together, and it has to be very controlled and formatted. I mean, I'd say one standout exception would be like Robin Williams as the genie in Aladdin, which was, there was a lot of improv, and they had to just pick their favorite clips.
Yeah.
But most of the time, it's a line read. You do it 100 different ways, but there's, it's a narrow spread of like how dramatic you're going to be or how deadpan you're going to be or, you know, whatever it is. So, but then to have somebody, you know, like Phil Lord, who has done a lot of comedic animated films, like knows when to have the character say something funny versus do something funny. And that comes across a lot in this film, is that it's not just funny one-liners that you can go home and quote and it's a funny joke, and if you've seen the movie you get it. But within the world of the story, I mean, I think about when Miles is deciding to test whether or not he can shoot webs and swing, and the build, he goes up and there's this big swell of dramatic music and he's at the top of the building, and then the music cuts out and he goes back down the stairs. And the whole theater's laughing. And then he's looking for a different, smaller building to go ahead and try it again for. And it's stuff like that where it's like he didn't say anything. Situationally, almost in a slapstick manner, it was hilariously funny.
It was.
And there are a number of things in the film. That's not too much of a giveaway for those of you who haven't seen it yet. But there are a number of those kinds of moments in the film where they let the situation, or the character's facial expression, or their lack of commentary dictate how funny it is, versus relying only on dialogue and the voice actor's performance. The characters are more than just the voices behind them.
What did you think, Spence?
I remember that scene that Chad was talking about going up to the rooftop. When that music cut, I was like, that was done so well. Like, that's the thing about this movie. So many things in this movie are done so well that it's like the perfect storm of, like, we're just so good at our jobs, you have no idea. And it's, you don't see stuff like that super often at the theaters. And so, like,
or at least coming out of Sony. I mean, let's just be honest. Shade. I mean,
well, that I know they did the emotion movie, I looked up the other movies they did too, and I'm like, oh gosh, it's just one after the other. And they all like did well financially, and that's upsetting because I know some of them weren't that great without even seeing them.
That's true. But like I said, it goes back to like great storytelling, being able to create that cohesive, fluid story, being able to know how your characters react in the environment they're put in and recognize their sense of humor. Like Chad was mentioning, being able to hit those beats, it's crucial for a character like Miles Morales as a teenager. He's in middle school. He's not in high school. He's in middle school. So a lot of the high school or the middle school humor, that's going to be apparent in this film. That's going to be apparent within this character. He's going to laugh at all the fart jokes. He's going to be the type of kid who's going to, you know, be ridiculous in all sense of the way, for a preteen or a teenager, and that should be translated in the character, much like how Spider-Man Noir is very dark and brooding and very dated in the way he insults people. That has to hit, that has to hit right on the mark for that character.
Yeah.
And then Jake Johnson playing the, you know, jaded Spider-Man, the Spider-Man who's going through it all and struggling and whatnot. Jake Johnson just does that well. I mean, he plays a struggling person well in the industry. I don't know why. Like, you take a look at his role in The New Girl, it seems like he's always struggling for something.
So the tip to Jake Johnson is, whatever character you're doing, just struggle and you're gonna do well.
Just struggle. don't even try. Just
amazing.
But you look at a lot of that and you see how well the film puts this like melting pot of you know, different great assets to the table, and it allows this film to just really tie it all together. Couple things before we wrap up. Is there anything, any other thoughts, any other things that you guys wanted to bring up? I know one of the great things that this film had, and I know, Spence, this is usually your arena, is soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you go ahead and give us a little bit?
Sorry. No, like, this isn't even normally my style of music, but I was just kind of, like, pulled into it just from, like, all, like the movie starts off with, like, Miles, like, just listening to some music and, like, singing along with it instead of going to school like he should be. But, like, it was such a well-done soundtrack that it, like, really just grabbed my attention because, like, the second I left the theater, I was trying to find it on my phone. So, like, that should alone tell you, like, it's pretty great.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, you got everything from Post Malone to Out of Sight to Drake. You even have Hypnotized by Notorious B.I.G. at the beginning of the film, which is a really great kind of reminder of, you know, hey, we're in the Bronx, we're in Brooklyn here. You know, this is where Biggie started. You know, this is his, you know, stomping ground. So why not start every single musical, you know, introduction with, first off, Notorious B.I.G.
Well, and they integrate the music so well.
They
like
do.
Sometimes the characters themselves are listening to the songs. Other times it's the backing track for an action sequence or whatever. But none of the songs overstay their welcome, which I think is one of the teasy kind of things that makes you go look for the soundtrack afterward. Because you're like, I only got to hear the first 15 seconds of the song and now I want to hear the rest of it, you know, like times 12 or 15, however many songs are in the movie. And I think that's great that they even used the songs to quickly set a tone and then let the story move it forward. You can go find the music later and love it all over again. Love it in its complete state.
Very true.
One thing that I would also point out, because I'm in marketing, my day job, the one that pays the bills, you can absolutely tell that in addition to creating the film, Sony also has the most prominent product placement repeatedly.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that.
And second place goes to Nike because both Miles's headphones, which are Sony, that he wears pretty frequently, and they always make sure that the Sony label is very clear on the side.
I was going to say, I'm like, I don't remember that label being that prominent when I see other people wearing them.
I have Sony headphones, and I'm like, my headphones do not look like that. Like a walking billboard?
Yeah, no, it's like belligerent. And then the Nike stuff, because he constantly doesn't tie his shoes, which is a very, like,
very
teenager
thing
to do, right?
That was my teenager.
But it always draws attention to the fact that that swoosh is right there on the side of the shoe. I mean, you're watching him fall, trip over a shoelace and fall. You know, so it, those were very prominent to me. And the other thing I was going to say, aside from branding, was I had to corroborate with somebody else before I saw it the second time. I had to corroborate with somebody else who had seen it in standard definition that there are numerous times that feel like they're supposed to be 3D, like where it's got that blurry, like, oh, I should have glasses on to see this. And this was a common experience for any of us who saw it in standard definition, non-3D. And I noticed it again the second time, you know, Eddie, seeing it with you, where I think it'd be interesting to see the film in 3D, for sure. But even seeing it in 2D or whatever, To see that there are visual effects being used that suggest like what's in focus or out of focus and where in the depth of field those elements are, it's just very unique. It absolutely stands out to your eyeballs while you're watching it.
Completely, because this film really wants you to focus on certain elements throughout the entire film. So it'll do like this vignette, like in certain instances with not so much like the color, but in the focus. And have like everything around it will seem like it's supposed to be 3D. It'll seem like there's multiple layers to it. And the center is crystal clear. But that around the edges, it's really either not blurry, but it's like multi-layered. Like there's several different layers of the same image that you're watching.
Yeah.
And the film does a great job of just redirecting your focus back to the center of attention. I think this is the animators had in mind that people will spend more time while watching this film looking for Easter eggs or other elements of the film other than paying attention to the storyline. I think that was one of the things they had in mind. They're like, well, what if we just, you know, create this little bit of vignette around the edges, and we force people to pay attention to the story in the center. And everybody just erupted like, yeah, you know, kind of thing. I think that's kind of the deal that's working here, but it works well with the storytelling, with, you know, the way everybody's glitching, the way the even when the whole situation that's happening in New York, in Brooklyn, and things are starting to shift and whatnot in colors, the design of these scenes in this film really work well with everything, every element that's added to this film, including that blurred edge type of view. So, and I think that's one thing to really, you know, give kudos, like we said, back to the animators. If this is something that they're going to continue to do in terms of not so much doing the same thing over and over again, but to the level of care and the level of like just expertise added to this film, if that's going to be the consistency, then I can't wait to see the next Sony animated film. So
you only have to wait till July for Wish Dragon.
You know, Spence, you didn't have to like. We're gonna leave the expectations high here, okay?
Wish Dragon.
So
feels like a step back.
It really does.
It's like a mid-90s movie. So wrapping this up, we're gonna go around the table, talk about does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles. Let's go ahead and start with Spence.
This film passes for me. There is just fantastic animation and just great music with a really well done script, and it all like somehow just gels together into an amazing product, and I'm going to give this a 5 out of 5 monocles.
Wow. 5 out of 5.
I wasn't expecting to do that when I walked in to see this movie, but I was blown away.
He's blown away. Spencer was blown away. Well, I will. The film passes for me. I had a great time with this film. I think the film does a great job servicing not only those that know the product and know the brand and know the property, but even the younger individuals. We were sitting where me and Chad were sitting. There was this little kid.
Oh gosh, that was so cool!
Right in front of us, and I honestly feel bad. But I didn't know if it was a boy or girl.
There was a comment that they made that I was like, oh, is that a little girl seeing somebody that she identified? Because it was a comment about Spider Gwen.
Yeah,
about Gwen Stacy as a spider person. I think it was a little boy when they got up and left. I think it was actually a little boy. But like it. That comment really was like, oh, that is why it's important, people,
exactly,
to show different kinds of people on screen as heroic characters to which you can aspire to be like.
Exactly. And that was a really cool opportunity for us to see that and to really see them understand it, like them connect to, oh, I'm tracking myself as a little kid. I'm tracking what's happening in this film and I get it. And I want to be like this, or I can be like this, or I want to do this. And so I thought that was really great. That's the mark of really great storytelling, in all honesty. So the film passes for me. I'm going to give it a 4.75. It was a great film. It was really awesome. But I want to make sure that this is consistent. I want to see this follow through to the next one. I want to see how well they're going to keep that going. Because if the next film is just as great as this one, it doesn't even have to be better. But even if it's just as great as this one, that one will get a 5. But I don't want this to be a fluke.
Wait a minute. It makes it sound like you're just withholding like 0.25.
This is on the studio.
You want to make sure that they're going to stay to a high
you
quality.
Can't handle the truth. Sorry.
Wow.
Sorry. Chad, let's go ahead.
Got interesting here at the end. I will point out, for those of you who haven't seen the movie yet, and we didn't give away too much of the story, so don't consider yourself overly spoiled because there's a lot to love when
That's
you go
true.
See it. Go ahead and stay through the credits because there is a tease at the end that's really exciting and fulfilling.
Oh, and
whether or not you know who one of the characters is, you have all the knowledge you need within the scene to enjoy it. And one of the things that I really enjoyed about it is, Eddie, to your point of, well, the next one had better be just as good. Allegedly, they've already announced that there's plans for a sequel and a spinoff film.
Mm-hmm.
At least one spinoff film. Probably Spider-Gwen, let's be honest.
Yeah, it says Untitled Spider-Woman.
Yes,
spin-off. Absolutely.
I mean, like,
there you go.
She has erupted in the comics. Like, she is
completely
so popular. As is Gwenpool, who's another odd derivative character.
Okay.
But anyway, there's an end credit sequence that also goes to show, like, in terms of showing different animation styles and different storytelling, you know, motifs and whatever, they have not scraped the bottom of the barrel yet. Like, there's so much more they can do. And I think that was a big part of what they were showing at the end with, you know, yet another two spider individuals being represented, one of whom is pretty well known, at least to, I'd say, like, mid-level fans or better of the Spider-Man series. So anyway, movie passes. I'm also going to give it a 5 because I think there are a few things that they went too fast for my eyes, but I acknowledge that I'm a little older than their target audience. The kids in front of us loved it. They were jumping around when they were leaving the theater, like they were trying to replicate some of the moves that they had just seen. That makes my heart swell. I'm so happy that it connected with an audience like that. Like, it's gorgeous. It's, like, thematically poignant. It's got a rhythm and a pace to it that really works, and it appeals to kids, which I think kids deserve to have good role models every day of the week. So, So any kind of a grievance I would have with my old eyeballs, they're out the window. I'll give it a 5.
Yeah, and also too, and this isn't spoilery at all, but it is something you should check out. There is a mid-credit slide, if you will, that honors Stan Lee. So if you get a chance to stay through the whole credits, make sure you pay attention in the mid-credits, and it's a really great just opportunity to respect and honor the man who created the character that we all know about. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can catch every episode on The Filmlosophers website at filmlosophers.com. Catch all 142 episodes. Also, drop us a line. How did you think about this film? Did you like it? Did you love it? Did you not like it? Are you not a fan? Let us know. Drop us a line on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Just so you know, of a couple upcoming weekend releases, you got Aquaman with Jason Momoa, Mary Poppins Returns with Emily Blunt and Lin-Manuel Miranda, and Bumblebee also with Hailee Steinfeld.
Yep.
So you got a lot of films coming up this week, so check them out. And but like I said, this was a great, awesome review, so we thank you for sticking around with us, no pun intended. But from all of us here at The Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
Thwip thwip.
I'm Chad.
That's best.
Class dismissed.